When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, this is Mark. Thank you for listening to the Catch My Killer podcast. Before I get started on this week's episode, I have a message for you from a new sponsor. I'd like to ask my male listeners this question. Do you ever wonder why women cheat? Wouldn't it be interesting to know what women think about infidelity? If I have gotten your attention, I would like to recommend a podcast called Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity. The podcast is a non-judgmental presentation from Rebecca Adams, who has personal experience with infidelity. In her podcast, she reads stories from anonymous women who explain why they have strayed from their significant others. By listening to stories of women who have strayed from their partners for various reasons, you can educate yourself. Perhaps some of these stories resonate with you. The Women on the Raw Truth, Stories of Female Infidelity podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe. And if you would like to know more about this unique podcast, please refer to the story notes for this episode.
This is the funeral home that's sending me the picture. So he's already looked at it, and he never noted or took the piece of paper out. As another person, nurse who looked at Cameron's fist said, did you notice that his ring finger is cut off? Now Cameron had, the engineering ring is worn on the hand that you write with. It's worn on the pinky finger. So that when you sign a document, it clunks and it reminds you of your engineering oath. So Cameron wore that ring pretty steady, especially when he was working. And she pointed out his pinky ring finger on his right hand was cut off. We already knew early on that we didn't get back his watch. We didn't get back his ring. We didn't get back his gold medallion necklace. We never got back his There was a blue jean jacket involved, too. So his personal effects came December 6th. They crossed the border, and by the 8th, we had them. And so we had his personal effects, including his wallet, his passport, and his cell phone. I never expected to get his cell phone. Now, my husband said he thought that he'd heard that we were getting it, but they wouldn't tell me where it was, where they found it. Cameron was a man who never wore anything in his back blue jean pockets, especially in a foreign country. You don't walk around with your passport out there. Cameron had a passport holder that he wore under his left shoulder. He showed it to me different times saying, Mom, I can always come home. Even if they rob me, I can always come home because I got my passport. Well, the passport holder's gone. And so the phone, what do you think, Mark? If this man had been in water for 30 days, which is what the sheriff's saying, in that creek for 30 days, would you think the phone would work?
It most likely wouldn't work.
It wasn't even wet, but it had taken 6 weeks to get to Canada. We charged it up, and yeah, it took quite a while, and I was a little bit worried about it exploding, but I put it inside a big bread bowl and put a lid on it, and it charged up, and it worked. So throughout 2019, just to back right up, to what is the biggest thing that went wrong here? The sheriff could have called the RCMP in Canada to assist on the file. And the sergeant that was here in our local detachment could have had the forensics on the death clothing done by June 2019. So the biggest problem we've had, besides many biggest problems, death in Montana, there's some evidence in the state, but there's a lot of evidence in Canada. The death clothing's in Canada, the cell phone's in Canada. Yet, because of international rules, the Canadian police cannot intervene with a U.S. case, and U.S. law enforcement cannot intervene in a Canadian case. So the RCMP could not get involved in the case without being asked, and Sheriff Linder never and would, like, refuse, basically. We asked constantly for them to ask, especially once we started to send the evidence to Linder. On November 15th, we sent our first letter to Linder saying we had all our concerns about the various stories that the bribe partygoers had told us or told Julia and Glenn. But within that next week, we'd stretched out the clothes in our shop. And a very smelly process, yes, but I was careful with the gloves. And we noticed dark stains on Cameron's clothing. And we contacted the sheriff and said, it looks like dark fluid, dark blood. It looks like there's even a reddish tint to it. Sheriff's answer was, well, that doesn't match the condition of the body. And that doesn't match the medical examiner's report. We didn't have any report at that point. But we knew that we saw blood and stains on Cameron's clothing.
Hello, this is Mark. Thank you for listening to the Catch My Killer podcast. Since 2015, I have written a weekly column about unsolved homicides and true crime for the Claremont Sun newspaper in Ohio. Before I begin this week's episode, I would like to ask for your support. Listeners can support the podcast by subscribing and buying me a $5 cup of coffee every month. It will help cover the costs associated with producing a successful podcast. You will receive exclusive content about true crime stories and eventually commercial-free podcast episodes if you subscribe. If you can help, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on either the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families through word of mouth and social media. And that's enough with the coffee business. This week's story concerns the strange death of Cameron Collin, who was found dead in a creek near Billings, Montana. Cameron Collin, 37, a petroleum engineer with a degree from Montana Tech, was 6'5" and always had a smile for his friends and family. According to Marion Collin, Cameron's mother, he excelled in almost every sport he played in his final years in Airdrie. He was extremely hardworking and had a stellar reputation with friends and family, and he could talk to anyone. Marion described him as a friendly and good person. Cameron flew to Billings to be at the wedding of his friend, whom he had studied engineering with in school. The same day, he attended a bachelor party at a rural property outside the city. On November 5th, 2018, other party guests drove into town, then returned around midnight. They didn't take Cameron into town with them. It was said he was intoxicated, so they left him behind. The group returned to find Cameron not where they had left him. According to witnesses, Cameron consumed several drinks at a lunch after being picked up from the airport. The report claims that after lunch, he bought a bottle of vodka and consumed it on his way to the party property. At the mention of these details, Marion said Cameron was a large man who came from a family known for holding their alcohol. Several people claimed Cameron continued to drink at the party and went outside to sleep after being accused of acting aggressively. Cameron was allegedly placed near a heater for warmth. He would vanish and never be seen alive again. Cameron was not found after returning with the group, so it was assumed he had arranged for alternative sleeping arrangements for the night. At some point between October 4th and 5th, Marion claimed no one tried to contact Cameron or find him. The post-mortem report indicates that the wedding party searched the vicinity without success. According to Marion, he never showed up for the wedding. The ceremony and reception continued as planned. A missing person report was made to the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office on October 7. Montana requires a missing person 21 or older to be reported missing within 8 hours and entered into the database of the National Crime Information Center of the United States Department of Justice. Cameron, however, was reported missing approximately 2 days after he was last seen. A search for Cameron began almost immediately, and other family members traveled to Montana to assist in the search. Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office and additional personnel, along with Cameron's father and sister, searched Prior Creek multiple times. They found no trace of Cameron. The body of Cameron was recovered at Prior Creek 1 month after he was allegedly last seen alive. Marion said that the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office was ready to wrap up the case shortly after the discovery of her son's body. On November 7th, the case files were closed without any further investigation. As stated in the report, the medical examiner found that the death was caused by cold water immersion combined with cocaine and alcohol usage. Marion, who has successfully petitioned for Cameron's personal representative status to advocate and request information on his behalf, said that the ruling just doesn't sit right with her and her family. "We could have accepted that in a way, but there were so many things that were wrong," she said. According to the Collin family, they have paid for independent forensic testing and data retrieval to try to unearth an accurate picture of what led to Cameron's death and everything that may have happened afterwards. Marion claims her son's autopsy contained several mistakes, according to a complaint that she submitted as Cameron's personal representative. The standard procedures and the autopsy findings were incorrect. There were also reddish-brown stains on Cameron's clothing and sawdust on his body at the time of his death. His watch, medallion, and engineering ring were also missing from the autopsy. According to Marion, a receipt was found in the back pocket of the jeans Cameron was found in, but it wasn't found during the autopsy. In addition, a folded piece of paper was found clenched in her son's left hand and was not documented. The autopsy report also listed a body weight 40 pounds heavier than what Marion said her son weighed in September of that year. According to Marion, the medical examiner's office claimed that water in the lungs caused the additional weight, but independent testing on behalf of the family by NMS Labs found no evidence of water in the lungs. According to Marion, several additional discrepancies between the official report and the private report are the source of doubt for the family. Marion, in an effort to hold authorities responsible for mistakes in Cameron's autopsy, sent emails to several government agencies. She has also attempted to contact the Department of Justice and the Department of Criminal Investigation. She feels that she hasn't been supported in her search for answers. For this week's story, I spoke to Cameron's sister Julia and his mother Marion. I would like to have you start off by telling my listeners about Cameron. What kind of a man was he?
He was born in Alberta here. And he's one of those kids that was at the 90th percentile of growth all along. He just grew, became a fine young man. By the time he was 16, he was 6 foot and just worked hard at sports and at his education. Cameron's just a friendly, outgoing young man and had lots of friends. And when he went into his career, he worked a lot in the oil patch here in Canada for his cousins. One was already a rig manager. And then he wanted to get into the downtown crowd, and he knew that he'd have to get an education. So he'd actually taken petroleum technician, and that was at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology here in Calgary. And then he realized if he went to the States, he could get a degree in 3 years. They would accept all his courses. So he actually went to school in Butte, Montana, and they helped him bring up his math. He did need some help with that. And he graduated in 2012 with his Bachelor of Science, Petroleum Engineer. Very proud moment. It was the athlete turned academic, and we were very proud of him. The dean of that school at the time, I think it's still the same man, it's Canadian. So they would share lots of Canadian stories. But Cameron came back to Canada, and they would say, "Where's your engineering experience?" He knew everything from rig spigot all the way up, but he hadn't yet worked there. So he actually got a job in the States. And I do believe, actually, the bride, Heather, had helped him get that job because she had graduated a year ahead. So in Butte, Montana, He was a Canadian kid. He went to the administration office and how do I find a place to live? And he said, there's these three girls that needed, or two, I can't remember now, wanted a roommate. And so we introduced, and so these three or four people lived together in this house, an old antique on Alabama Road in Butte. And that's how he met Heather, the sisters, and even out to meet their family, the Hauser. So he knew this Hauser family very well. And so go through all the career. He's worked in North Dakota. He moved to Billings for a short time. And then I do believe that was about some sort of downturn. But he got moved to Texas, and he worked in southern San Antonio. Cameron being so tall, he's called Cam Canada by lots of his coworkers. And there was this young, older Mexican fellow who looked way up at him and he says, you're the tallest Canadian I've ever met. And then, actually, you're the only Canadian I've ever met. So while he was down there, Cameron was just an ambassador for Canada. And when he didn't have work in the States, he worked for a high-tech GrowSafe, high-tech industry, where they installed waterers and equipment for ranchers, farmers, dairy places. So you can understand this equipment. The cow goes in to drink. He has a tag in the ear. It's weighed. The ear tag takes all the data of how much that animal drank. And then, of course, based on the feed in the area, they were able to figure out and help ranchers choose which cattle to breed, which cattle to sell. So Cameron was very good at putting this equipment together with his engineering degree. But then he went back to the States. He got this job with Topswell Services out of Utah. And I really regret that he did. But he knew that whole Southwest area, Southwest and Eastern USA, because a lot of the dairy farmers were in the eastern side, and of course all the well site stuff was in the Midwest. So he was familiar with Wyoming and Colorado, and when you're based in Utah, you're actually working all over. So that's the background. So when he was getting married, she sent him an invitation. I do not know what the relationship was between them when they were in Butte, but they were still friends. And Heather's groom, as I understand it, never accepted the friendship that Heather was helping Cam, helping him get jobs in the States. And I believe there was always something bad there. And that's part of the problem. But Cameron flew down and he went to that bachelor party. And in hindsight, when I was after we found, I guess we should, the whole party evening, there's a lot to it. We went missing that evening. The next day he was still missing. He was supposed to have gone to a concert with two other friends, one from North Dakota and one from Billings. And then the day of the wedding, he was still missing, and they didn't report him missing till the day after the wedding. And they didn't really start looking until they may have missed the wedding, but he's not going to miss his flight back, flight to Utah. So he was actually gone down to the States 3 days earlier than his shift. He was working in 2 weeks rotation out of Utah. So 2 weeks in Canada, 2 weeks there. He was supposed to fly back there on the 8th and never made that flight. By then, Cameron's brother, father and sister had started driving down on the evening of the 7th, and went partway and then the rest of the way on the 8th and went out the property on the 9th. And as my husband had described it, they arrived in the yard and it's people pulling on coats and coming out and everybody talking at once. And it was overwhelming. And then finally the sheriff pulled in the yard. And there was an incident where someone had called Crime Stoppers or had phoned in and said there had been a sighting on the road at 11:30 on October 4th, Thursday, 11:30 p.m. Tall man, black shirt, boots. The description seemed to suit Cameron to the T. And looking back, we don't know if that was a real reporting, but everybody took off and went out of the yard, and the search didn't really start, I don't think, until the next day. So by then, Cameron had been gone 6 days. And we found out later, too, that various people say, oh, he was here and he was there. But as we started to pull out the evidence, the whole stag party, there must have been a huge amount of drugs there, of one sort or the other, because when we had Cameron's desk clothing tested here in Canada, there was at least four or five different drugs on his clothing. And the night of the party, somehow late in the evening, all of a sudden, the groom and five men take off and go to Lockwood. It's called Planet Lockwood, I think it is, the strip club in Billings. And they only stayed there a short time and came back. It was just like all of a sudden everybody's going. And they claim to have left Cameron because he was drunk. This is all the testimony. Cameron was intoxicated. They tried to make a big deal of him chugging a bottle of vodka he'd purchased. After landing at Billings, so you got to understand, you got to go Calgary, Denver, Billings. They went to the Divide Bar and Grill, and there was about 20 of them, and Cameron picked up the bill. But on the way back, he was registered to be in the Baymont Wydom Hotel. And they say he went with a sister-in-law, a sister of the bride and her husband, to their place, and they took him down. And they're the ones that said he was chugging on this bottle. When Glenn got there, my husband, the sheriff himself, they both noticed that there was only two drinks taken out of this vodka bottle. All the testimony that came out when we finally got it tried to really paint the picture of Cameron being intoxicated, aggravating, wanting to fight, but that at the time that they suddenly decided to go to this strip club, they left him in the shop and that he had passed out. They could have taken him to his hotel, into a camper, into a trailer, into the house, but they left him, they say, on the shop floor. And it, as we got more evidence later, I don't even believe he was there. So the night of, the parents were there, the one grandparent was there. There was supposedly children in the house. The testimony that was given by these people later is that they didn't know Cameron was left there. And the mother of the bride gave testimony. She last saw him standing at the bar with the other guys at between 10 and 10:30. The sister of the bride and her husband, they came up November 3rd to the funeral.
The husband said he last saw Cameron standing outside talking and smoking with other men. Mary and Colin and her family became suspicious and began to suspect there was foul play involved.
Malarkey is what we found out to be later when we got all the evidence. But in that time frame, they searched. My daughter and my husband went. Glenn designed some long sticks with hooks to help search the creek. Julia crawled through culverts searching for her brother. People in the community were looking. The sheriff's office were looking. The good friends from the party are notably not really looking. And on the 15th of October, when our daughter had arranged with a drone operator to go back to the property, she'd arranged with Heather that they were going to talk about what else, where else could they look, and allow this drone operator to scan the property. When they got there, there was a brand new great big metal gate up, and the groom would not let them on the property.
Furthermore, Marion informed me the bride and her sisters didn't help search for Cameron, who they claimed was his friend. She found this disturbing.
So it just was a bitter pill to think that they really worried about their good friend Cameron. The searches continued. The search almost ended. I don't know if you read that in the dialogue, but the Canadian consulate, I do believe, phoned at one point, and that helped keep the search going. There's not much the Canadian consulate can do, really, but they can be involved before the body's found. And they can be involved if it's an inactive file. We haven't seen that piece yet. So the sheriff and our daughter, is she did a spectacular job at working the media. She contacted the ones in Calgary, and then all of a sudden they were contacting her, and then she made sure the local media. But when she started to get the local media going, the bride and groom were really upset. Don't involve us. We don't want to be involved. But it happened there, right?
Cameron's sister Julia and her father had participated in the search for Cameron and found nothing. However, Julia did hear rumors about her brother's disappearance. Unfortunately, she returned to Canada with her father and no answers to her brother's disappearance.
And then my husband and Julia came back to Canada, and somebody posted something on Facebook, look in the creek. So the sheriff on November 3rd went up with a helicopter with one lieutenant and the helicopter pilot, and they found Cameron floating face down, not that far downstream from the shop. An area that was searched, you got to visualize, teams of people were searching that creek from above where the shop was all the way down to Highway 87, which is quite a stretch. Planes were flying over, drones were flying over, the whole area was searched, all of a sudden the body shows up.
On November 3rd, the family is notified that Cameron's body was found.
And as we were just finishing, just got off the line with the sheriff, Callie, the sister of the bride, phones Julia and says, what was in Cam's hand? We just found out he was dead. We had no clue. But the significance of that comes up later. So we had a funeral to do. We had to get a body back. They wanted to cremate Cameron and send a box. We could not do that. But we already are just overbrimming with something's wrong. The testimonies don't match. People saying this, people saying that, left in the shop floor. But we had the funeral. Cameron's body arrived November 7th. And on November 10th, we had a funeral here in Canada. 500 people attended. 300 people watched on the webcast. It's quite a good send-off. But later in getting documentation, we found that Lieutenant Shane Bancroft had put out an email saying, okay, let's wrap this up. He sent out an email, send all your reports so that we can get this over to the county attorney. That was November 7th. Cameron's body wasn't even back in Canada, and they were just wrapping up.
The family would learn that there is no investigation into Cameron's death. The ruling remained death by drowning.
In hindsight, I guess there was some, because there are a few more reports that came from Sergeant Burke and a few others up to early December. But they seemed to be in such a rush to finish up everything. And November 5th was the autopsy. On the afternoon of November 5th, we were supposed to receive a preliminary report. We never did.
Marion had a chance to communicate with Dr. Kurtzman, who was the pathologist and state examiner who conducted Cameron's autopsy.
I made some comment, the stuff that we've got looks like it's cut and pasted. Well, they got quite upset. But you know what? He did send me the autopsy. And so we had something to work with. June, we had a lawyer, 2019. They started the process of getting police documentation. I said to our lawyer, there's something in Canada called a request to rule. So he sent that after I told him. And Judge D'Souza said, okay, you have till December 13th, 2019 to deliver the police documentation. When we got that police documentation, it's a massive amount of information, but I realized that Cliff Mahoney, the coroner, had signed a death certificate for Cameron on November 6th. A death certificate, November 6th, day after the autopsy, saying cause is cold water immersion influenced by alcohol and cocaine. The autopsy samples had not even been sent to Montana Science Division at that point. They didn't go until the 8th of November. The toxicology report that was requested, they couldn't even, by the county, they couldn't even do the tox kit. There was, I believe the wording is, blood samples not adequate enough. There wasn't enough blood in the sheriff-owned samples to do that tox test. So what they did is they took a tissue sample and sent it to NMS labs in Pennsylvania to get a tox report done. And that didn't go until November 23rd. Samples went to NMS. Report came back December 4th, and it wasn't signed off in December till December 10th. But on November 6th, like I say, Cliff Mahoney signed for cocaine. He could have said at that point was cold water immersion, and that's like drowning. But the thing of it is, he signed that certificate, and on November 21st, certified it. Like, he certified that clause. This is very important stuff for court cases and whatever. When the coroner signs off on something before he even gets all the data back, it's just, and as you go along with this, so it's signed, it's certified, and the death certificate, And then Robert Kurtzman, who's the medical examiner, he at least waited until the tox report came back. So he signed his autopsy report on December 12th. But in going through that autopsy report with a fine-tooth comb, there's so many errors, so many mistakes. If Cameron drowned, you'd think he would have noted water in the lungs.
Right.
There's no water noted in the lungs, and the lungs weigh the same as yours. As a living man's lungs, Cameron's lungs were weighed in that autopsy report basically the same. The one lung, I forget which it is, one's about 420, one's about 395. That's average for an average male. The colors on were wrong. Green shirt, Cameron's black was shirt was black with a huge white affliction logo on it. There was a lot of mistakes, including the x-rays. We only got three, and they're all the same, two on one side, two the other. The top of the skull is covered. The chin is covered. And I could see that it was my son's head because there's dental implants. But a nurse pointed out to me that it was covered up. And she said, oh, by the way, his nose is broken. Yet Kurtzman put no trauma to the body. Oh, it's just horrible. We could not view the body because it had to be partially embalmed, and then they couldn't open it for us to look. But I asked for two pictures. Can you give me something that shows me this? Cameron. They sent me pictures of his fists. And in there, I could see there was something in his left fist. And in looking at the police document, it verified that, yes, this is a piece of paper. Sergeant Burke had seen a folded piece of paper in Cameron's left fist. Kurtzman never even noted it. This is the funeral home that's sending me the picture. So he's already looked at it, and he never noted or took the piece of paper out. As another person, nurse who looked at Cameron's fist said, did you notice that his ring finger is cut off? Now, Cameron had the engineering ring is worn on the hand that you write with. It's worn on the pinky finger so that when you sign a document, it clunks and it reminds you of your engineering oath. So Cameron wore that ring pretty steady, especially when he was working. And she pointed out his pinky ring finger on his right hand was cut off. We already knew early on that we didn't get back his watch. We didn't get back his ring. We didn't get back his gold medallion necklace. We never got back his, there was a blue jean jacket involved too. So his personal effects came December 6th. They crossed the border, and by the 8th, we had them. And so we had his personal effects, including his wallet, his passport, and his cell phone. I never expected to get his cell phone. Now my husband said he thought that he'd heard that we were getting it, but they wouldn't tell me where it was, where they found it. Cameron was a man who never wore anything in his back blue jean pockets, especially in a foreign country. You don't walk around with your passport out there. Cameron had a passport holder that he wore under his left shoulder. He showed it to me different times saying, Mom, I can always come home. Even if they rob me, I can always come home because I got my passport. Well, the passport holder's gone. And so the phone, what do you think, Mark? If this man had been in water for 30 days, which is what the sheriff's saying, in that creek for 30 days, would you think the phone would work?
It most likely wouldn't work.
It wasn't even wet, but it had taken 6 weeks to get to Canada. We charged it up, and yeah, it took quite a while, and I was a little bit worried about it exploding, but I put it inside a big bread bowl and put a lid on it, and it charged up, and it worked. So throughout 2019, just to back right up to what is the biggest thing that went wrong here, the sheriff could have called the RCMP in Canada to assist on the file. And the sergeant that was here in our local detachment could have had the forensics on the death clothing done by June 2019. So the biggest problem we've had, besides many biggest problems, death in Montana, there's some evidence in the state, but there's a lot of evidence in Canada. The death clothing's in Canada. The cell phone's in Canada. Yet, because of international rules, the Canadian police cannot intervene with a U.S. case, and U.S. law enforcement cannot intervene in a Canadian case. So the RCMP could not get involved in the case without being asked, and Sheriff Linder never and would, like, refuse, basically. We asked constantly for them to ask, especially once we started to send the evidence to Linder. On November 15th, we sent our first letter to Linder saying we had all our concerns about the various stories that the bribe partygoers had told us or told Julia and Glenn. But within that next week, we'd stretched out the clothes in our shop. And a very smelly process, yes. But I was careful with the gloves. And we noticed dark stains on Cameron's clothing. And we contacted the sheriff and said, it looks like dark fluid, dark blood. It looks like there's even a reddish tint to it. Sheriff's answer was, well, that doesn't match the condition of the body. And that doesn't match the medical examiner's report. We didn't have any report at that point. We knew that we saw blood and stains on Cameron's clothing.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For this part of the story, I spoke to Cameron's sister Julia, who participated in the ground search for her brother. I asked her to share her thoughts about her brother in the search.
My big brother was my hero, basically. We had a strong bond. I was basically his precious baby sister, and he was my protective big brother. And growing up, I idolized him. He was just this tall, great guy, and everybody loved him. We were pretty close. And yeah, and everywhere we went, I was proud to say he was my big brother.
He was a big guy, too. He really was literally your big brother. 6'5".
6'5". I could see him anywhere across the bar or wherever we were, and I could point him out anywhere. I'd say, hey, look over there. See that really tall cowboy over there? Well, that's my big brother.
I saw the pictures of him. He's a tall guy. So what kind of a guy was he?
He was just very charismatic. He was athletic and adventurous, but I always admired this strong, charming presence he had everywhere he went. He had a big smile, and when he walked into a room, everyone would look. It was hard to miss him. But most of all, I think he was kind, and that's what drew people to him. He certainly had his tough side. He wasn't a pushover, and I was always confident he could handle himself in any situation. But he preferred to use his wit and his charm to diffuse things. He had what he called the gift of gab, and he could easily talk to anyone. He was always telling me stories about strangers he met in strange places, because he made friends everywhere he went because he just easily charmed his way into any social group.
It's interesting. Sounds like a pretty great guy.
Yeah, well, that's how he met people all over Canada and all over the U.S., basically, in just 38 years of life.
Sounds like he did do a lot in a short time here. Tell me about his death. Where were you and how did you find out?
Well, that's a trick question because it actually took a month of searching for him to learn of his death. On October 4th, he went missing, but days passed before we were contacted and then it was reported. So I was the first one alerted to it. I had texted my brother on that Friday. I had some tickets to a hockey game I wanted to offer him and I never got a reply, but you know, he would get busy and he would get back to me when he had time. So I didn't think much of it. But on October 6th, I got this message from some girl asking if I was Cam's little sister. And that's what was going on. I didn't really get a reply. And then on October 7th, I got a phone call and they said he was missing and they were going to report him as a missing person in Billings, Montana. So pretty much by October 8th, my dad and I were driving to Montana to search for him. So I didn't actually learn of his death until a month after, on November 3rd. I was back in Canada, and after the police had once again searched the creek with divers and cadaver dogs, I came home, and about a week after I had returned and was planning to go back, I got a phone call saying they had gone up in the helicopter one more time and seen him in the creek.
Now, how did you react when you found this out? It must have been really surprising, because when your mother told me the story, I thought, wait a minute. How does this friendly guy going to a joyous moment like a wedding that he's supposed to be in, and then he ends up dead being found in a creek, and then trying to figure out how did he even end up in the creek? So how did all that hit you? You had to have thought, how did we get there? What happened to him? So what was your reaction when you started really thinking about his death?
When I found out he was missing, I pretty much went into shock. I just went into a different state of mind to get through what we needed to do. And then when I found out he was dead, my world just crumbled around me. My heart, it actually tore apart, and it was the physical pain that was unbearable. And after searching for him for a month, I couldn't go on anymore. I was just lost.
I guess that's to be expected, being in shock. Now, while you were down there searching, was there anything that you found to be really significant to his death? Was there something, a moment like that made you feel really suspicious about what happened?
There was a lot of moments. It's hard to pinpoint just one. There's a few different things, but I guess I could just, I'll just tell you about the search. When we were arrived in Montana, my dad and I got there and we were instantly swarmed by the bridal family. And we had barely put our feet on the ground. And we were instantly like being told these multiple stories. And it seemed mostly like conjecture and theories about what they thought could have happened to him. And we were only there a short time. And suddenly a sheriff drove down the driveway with reports of a possible sighting the night he went missing, of a man walking down the highway and at the time approximately when he would have been walking towards Billings. But it was just like being in a snowball, in an avalanche, just trying to hang on, just trying to collect as much detail as you hurtle through this slippery slope. We were searching everywhere. We were searching the property. We were searching where the sighting was. It was like walking through a fog, really. We just kind of had to keep asking ourselves if this was really happening. Social media helped us spread our story fast and quickly, especially with the number of friends Cam had made across Canada and US. But social media also brought along with it a lot of bad things. I was contacted by numerous people claiming to be psychics. They basically take advantage of people at their weakest moments. And that it's a time when you're clinging to anything. You want to listen to everybody and any possible hope there is. But I was pretty haunted by some of the things I was getting messaged. Someone actually told me they saw my brother hurt and dying in the woods and the smell of pine trees really strong. Like, and that haunted me. And I did crawl like through valleys and up cliffs and under trees and through snow. And when I was driving past fields, I got used to looking for freshly dug dirt piles where somebody could have hidden a 6-foot body. And you get thrown so many theories at you, you just don't know what to believe. But yeah, so we were bombarded. And there's just some things that I found out while I was searching that didn't make sense. It was the people at the property was the biggest thing, is that they were, like, when we first got there, they were so eager to help us and ready to search. And they ran to the spot where we saw the sighting, and everybody separated and started looking around. And but after I got drones, I got people in Montana offered to help me. And I actually got a guy came with a drone on the property. And I went off with this guy and his drone. And by the time I came back with him, because I followed along the creek with him, suddenly the homeowner was in a fight with my dad. And my dad came to me and said, we had to leave right now. We weren't allowed to be there. He didn't want us droning over his property. So that was the first shock to me. It was just like the hospitality, just the doors slammed shut and we weren't allowed on that property anymore. After being there for a while, my dad ended up going back to Canada. We returned to Canada for a little bit and he needed to be with my mom by that point, but I wasn't done yet. I gathered supplies and I talked to media in Canada, and then I went back to Montana and started organizing more searches. And I had lots of support from people in Billings. Some locals came out and helped me to do searches on the highways in certain areas where we thought his phone pinged at. There was one area along the highway where his phone showed that he had gone to. It said he had left the property and gone to this property and then gone back. And so we tried searching there and nobody seemed to know why. And the police tried to pass it off as, well, it just could have pinged at that tower or something like that. There's different things like that. The Wings of Mercy group, they sent a drone guy to help me, but being blocked from the property kind of limited our range. But one guy even offered to take me up in his plane so I could fly over the creek and search. I'll never forget the kindness of those people that did come to help me, even after the homeowners stopped helping.
Another question I had was, from what I understand, the area where they actually found your brother, that area had been searched and he wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, he mysteriously shows up in an area that was searched. What was that about?
It was just so weird because I had been there through all of it. I was there with my dad. We had bought these poles, to like long poles, and he had put a nail in the end of it so that we could search through brush and poke through the creek. So my own dad did that at that area where he was found. And then we watched as the sheriffs went on a dinghy and they basically had a really long pitchfork, basically, that's what it looked like. And they were scraping the bottom of the creek and going along it and really going at the sides, because they said that's where somebody could probably get stuck under brush, is in the side of the creek. But so I watched that. And then when I was back there for the second time, I watched the search and rescue came back and they had man trackers and they had divers in that creek and they had cadaver dogs going along and drinking the water, looking, doing what they do. And so by that point, I was sure that he was not in that creek. And it wasn't until after I left and went back to Canada, a few days after I got back, I got the call that he was found. And it was just shocking to think that he was there that whole time, possibly. But there's just so many things that we found out afterwards, too, that didn't seem to make sense. I've read the report myself from the sheriff's where this guy observed his body being taken out of the creek. And he was describing the body and how it was found. And he mentions a piece of paper in Cameron's hand. And you'd think if he was in water, how would he have paper in his hand? Paper doesn't really last very well in water, let alone for a month. There's like little details that have just been coming up. And every time we tried to reach out, every time my mom has tried to reach out to the sheriff and mention these things, like, hey, how come, what's with this detail? What's with that detail? Can you answer this question for me? They won't answer the question. They basically say that they're just like, stop contacting us, please.
Because they've already ruled it an accident or drowning or whatever, which I find that strange that he supposedly drowned, but yet he didn't have water in his lungs.
Yeah, they didn't really have a good autopsy report. We don't really know. That was the gist of it. It was like, it could be a few possibilities. But then, like, things just didn't seem to make sense. It just seemed so cut and paste. They didn't even have my brother's shirt description right. They didn't have his weight right. None of it, some of the things just didn't add up, really. And it was just, it was frustrating because the whole time I was there and searching, I relied heavily on the justice system there, that they were there to help us. And they did great in the search and rescue. And then they assured me, they said, if there's a body found, that's when the real investigation will be. They said they would do certain things, but then they never did those things. They just basically said, okay, well, he's found, case closed. That was it. I sometimes wonder if I had gone back to Montana after he had been found, if they would have taken us more seriously, not just because we're in international. I don't think we were really top priority. They just wanted to get us out of the media, basically.
So your family doesn't believe that his death was a drowning or an accident. Is that correct?
We have suspicions. There's just different things that came back to us that didn't make sense. The cell phone doesn't make sense. Deleted data off of it doesn't make sense. The boots that came back to us were not his. We just have these questions that are unanswered. And we're also angry with the homeowners there, that they just put up the wall and said, that's it, that's done, and stop contacting us. But they really, if they're truthful in what they said, they left him in a state of just, I don't know what to say. Like, the way they described how they left him in that garage, he was obviously unwell and maybe should have had some help instead of being left behind.
I would agree with you on that one. They probably should have either taken him to his hotel room or maybe take him to the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of just leaving him there and going out to town. But that's apparently what happened. The last question that I would have for you is, how has the loss of Cameron affected your entire family?
Well, I would say none of us are the same. My mom probably has suffered the most, but she's also the strongest one out of us because she tries every day still to get an answer from someone or to get at least one person to say, I will help you. My dad, he's lost his best friend. My middle brother, he lost his roommate, his support, his guide, he's lost, not the same. We have this huge void that can never be filled. And I lost the one person I thought I would have by my side throughout my whole life. I can barely whisper my brother's name, and it's been 3 years.
Sounds like it really pretty much heavily impacted your family because Cameron was such a big part of the family.
Yeah.
And now trying to adapt to life without him.
Well, we just feel a little lost, really. Like, we don't know what to believe, and we can't just let it go. We haven't been able to even, we're just a little lost now. We're just trying to find answers.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the conclusion of this story, I spoke to Cameron's mother, Marion, to get her final thoughts about the death of her son.
We never noticed that the boots were wrong until later. But what was sent with our son's body in a black bag was the clothing and these boots. The boots are only size 11, brown, working cowboy boots. Cameron had gone down with his size 13. He's a tall man. He has a good foundation. And size 13 dress, black cowboy boots, kind of greenish blue trim on it. And we got given size 11 boots. So now who, if they were on his feet, they were on his feet when they picked him out of the creek, apparently. Who's going to believe that Cameron said to somebody, hey, can I take your boots? You can have mine. I'm going to walk to the creek with them and take his watch and whatever. And, oh, by the way, he's supposed to have quite a bit of money in his wallet, someone said. I can't see yet where that was drawn because I have access to the accounts and everything now. But I think it might have been an account that I don't know about in Denver. But he only came, the wallet came back with 120 American and 110 Canadian. So, like, right there, you've got clothing, blood on it. You've got boots that are the wrong size coming back. By the way, it's hard to get forensic work done if you don't have a police file number. We didn't have a Canadian file number. It would have made it so much easier. But I finally found in Ontario a lab, Wyndham Labs, that would do forensics for a private individual or an executor of the estate. So I did by then. I had my personal rep status. The death clothing has blood all over it. They tested it. It was Cameron's blood. And there was the presence of other blood. So not only did Cameron have his own blood on his shirt, on the side of his shirt, on the neck, on the collar, on the hip pocket, down the back, blue jeans. So that was the forensics done there. They tried to do fingerprinting for us, but they couldn't find any fingerprints on those brown boots. I found a lab in Calgary that would test for chemicals in soil, and they found the reddish soil on his black jacket and on his pants would actually match a rocky environment. There was certainly some diatoms, one-celled creatures that are in creeks. And then they also found a fiber, a man-made fiber in the hair sample that could be from the hunting poncho camouflage. The fiber could be from that. And there were signs of green paint. And on the clothing, because as the legs dried, we found green stain. And the sheriff group, when we had one conference call, discounted that. Oh, it's just grass. I said to him, look, I've had three kids. I know what grass stains are. But we had it tested, and it chromium acid on his pant legs and this green paint.
After finding issues with Cameron's boots, blood stains, and other inconsistencies, Marion discussed Cameron's phone.
The cell phone. Once we found it was working, and, you know, I was nervous that it wasn't in the best of shape, but it's still putzing along. It's in a safety deposit box now. We upgraded the phone from a Samsung 7 to a 10. So that means we put his SIM card in the 10 so that it was preserved. And then we sent both phones to TCS Forensic in BC. They're a highly accredited cell phone forensics service. And they preserved, they imaged both of those phones. And they went through and they carved back everything that had been deleted. They got an amazing amount. That by carving back, it means any time that Cameron's phone pinged with a plane flying over, we got a point. It's all over that we got these points. But unfortunately, because somebody deleted the Google data, there's some GPS points without dates. So now I can talk to you about what happened in October with that phone. Now that we had the forensic proof, as early as October 9th, 2018, someone was using Cameron's phone to search other GPS locations. It was just like a cascading effect really quickly. Six U.S. states, I'm talking Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, and Utah. I'm missing one. I counted five. But anyway, we're in Cameron's Google account. And so why all of a sudden would these six states be in a Canadian Google account where they're still hunting for the person or the body? What frightened them? In hindsight, we thought Cameron must have seen something. We know that he was in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. But what were these wrong people into? What did he see? So many people were worried about what was on his phone, that they deleted data, and what was in his Google account, that they deleted the timeline and location history, always for October 4th. So again, with that evidence, because this forensics is fantastic, we could see who had his device. And so someone had his device October 9th. We know the address. We know that an apartment in Hunter Point Apartments in Billings had his device. What was of most of interest was that the device was in, they look at the GPS location.
According to Marion, the grid coordinates had the phone being located at the sheriff's office 9 days before Cameron's body was found. I found that to be an interesting development.
And it updated location data on October 4th. So if that was authorized access, because they had, the sheriff's office had been in the Google account earlier, you'd think they would have put it into evidence, and you think they would have informed the family. They did. So what's going on? When we presented that to the sheriff to say, we have proof that the phone was in your building.
So before his friend's wedding, a group of guys go to a strip club. But Cameron doesn't go because he's allegedly drunk and just gets left behind. Why would he be left behind, and how did he get into the creek? Why would he even go there?
The million-dollar question. He was never in the creek until they threw him in either the day of the 3rd or a couple days before the 3rd of November. The thing with this forensics, we could see that Cameron had been in this place called Bad Baby Coulee. Earlier in the evening, when these folks are saying they're partying, what is Cameron's phone and presumably Cameron doing in the depths of Bad Baby Coulee, which is just at the end of this party property? And when you look at the police documentation, the evidence, there's testimony from a rancher who found a space blanket in a coulee. He was sorting out cattle and he turned it in. That blanket should have been tested against the DNA imprint that I gave to the sheriff. One of my to-dos is to call Keith, whatever his name is, and ask him, could he give me the GPS point of that and see if it matches the GPS point now that has, I believe it's 65% probability of being in Bad Baby Coulee. So this forensics that they give us, they actually give us the probability of being right. And most of the points have 88% or above as to where there was. So just back to that testimony I talked about at the beginning about the bride's mother and the fellow that came up here to Canada who said that Cameron was in the shop around 10 to 10:30. I have a GPS point that Cameron's phone was behind Shipton's sporting goods store in Billings at that same time. So who's lying? The phone? Or these people. The GPS points, as soon as we informed the sheriff that we had GPS points showing Cameron's movements being in the Crow Reservation, Cheyenne Reservation, Hay Coulee, down to Lodgegrass, the sheriff should have taken that information and put it against what did these other people say. He should have, at the very beginning, he kept saying, oh, I just need one more lead. And we will complete the subpoena to look at the partygoer's cell phone records, which were supposedly frozen. He has not yet completed that subpoena. What we have here is we have a complete story in death clothing forensics and cell phone forensics that can prove that there was foul play. Something bad happened to Cameron, and it's been ignored and not looked at. And so, who do we think did this? It's people in the wedding party, either accidentally or deliberately, beat up Cameron, almost killed him. Something happened on the reservation. There's GPS points on Bighorn River, which runs right through the reservation. Hay Coulee is right by the reservation, by a fishing lodge there. Somehow, and got taken back to Billings. The sawdust, I forgot to mention the sawdust. The lab in Calgary found, we tested some sawdust that I found on Cameron's clothing, and it was found on the inside of his clothing. When we had it tested, that sawdust is actually a compost accelerant. So if they wanted to make a body rot faster to make it look like it had been in water, that's something they might have done. I don't know. But it's a type of accelerant that you would find in an abattoir or in a ranch house. Horse barn where you wanted to rot the manure faster, you would mix it with this accelerant, this sawdust, and it was in Cameron's socks, inside his shirt, when we got the shirt back in Canada. There's something rotten just all over this case.
So you're telling me someone tried to break down Cameron's body faster by using a sawdust-type substance. There is no reason for this unless someone didn't want his body to be found. Sounds like someone wanted to hide something.
Yes. Then how about if you stuck Cameron in a freezer for a while?
Now did you say the ruling was he drowned while on drugs? But there is no water in his lungs.
Does that mean
accidental?
Accidental.
So authorities aren't looking into this case because of the accidental death ruling, and your family wants this changed to either undetermined or homicide. Is that correct?
Homicide. You had asked me to describe what I've tried to do here. I've tried to work with the sheriff. I gave him everything. Cell phone forensics, which are so definitive. They're so plain that there's something wrong. And he said, I see no nexus to bring in any other law agency. The file is inactive. And I'm really terribly sorry. I took it to the county attorney, never got back to me on anything. Because apparently a county attorney can actually instruct a sheriff to look at things. I sent it to the Yellowstone County Commissioners, who sent it to the county attorney, who's supposed to send complaints to the attorney general. He never did. Or if he did, they didn't do anything with it. So I've worked my way through the Yellowstone figures. The FBI in Billings said they couldn't do anything because they needed the sheriff to ask them to assist. But that man, the FBI Billings guy, said he couldn't do anything because he hadn't been asked. Plus, Cameron could have just told these people that they could be in his Google account. What? 6 GPS locations in 6 U.S. states. Cameron took the time to, what, send out a mass email? It was just ridiculous, just demeaning. And I went up to the governor, and then I went up to the senator. Now, the senator, John Tester, his administration, they said they can't get involved in anything legal. It's not legal. It was inactive. The senator's administration lady gave me the medical examiner's board email. And so I could file a complaint about Robert Kurtzman and what I feel was sloppy autopsy work. He never took fingernails. He never took hair samples. Lots of things are wrong. He had Cameron weighing 250 pounds or something. Cameron was underweight at that time. He's probably only about 180. And there's no water in the lungs, so where's all this weight? Anyway, I filed a complaint with the Department of Labor and saying I would request that an independent forensic pathologist review the autopsy report and the toxicology reports, because by then, by February 20, 2019, we had paid for our own private samples, which we had asked to be taken, to be tested for drugs, for heroin, for fentanyl, and there's traces of all sorts of things in the blood work that we got back. So we had asked Kurtzman to help us, and he says, I'm not going to question anything. And we asked him to give permission for NMS Labs to speak to us directly. He wouldn't let us talk directly to NMS Labs, so they couldn't talk to us about this stuff. In the labor report, I had asked for this review. There were 7 doctors on the panel. I got a hearing, but of the 7 doctors on the panel, not one was a forensic pathologist. Not one. And a few of the guys in there, the doctor, male doctors, were wanting to say, okay, let's get us a forensic pathologist. And then they worked their way around and finding one, the cost and whatever. And so when the podiatrist moved to dismiss, they all voted to dismiss.
It seems as if you have a major battle ahead of you to get a homicide ruling for your son.
Have you shared your son's story with the local and national media?
We've tried. We did get a local paper here. You finally did an article. There's mistakes in there. There's just, couldn't get it going. We just couldn't get this media going. But now, in this last month, October 28th is when the local paper did that article. And it's been picked up by Nebraska News 6 or something or other. And also in North Dakota, that article went out there. The sheriff's standing strong and that it's an inactive file. Because there was GPS locations in Canada that were in Cameron's Google account. So Alberta, Saskatchewan, and I think BC, British Columbia, were in the account. And I was able to prove to the local RCMP that a GPS location in Calgary had altered some data. Because, like, even the RCMP said, okay, so there's people in this account. What can we do? Well, so they're looking all over acreages, rich acreages in South Calgary, Northern Alberta. Why are they in Cameron's Google account and using it to search these places? I thought maybe they had some active cases or something going. But that's now because I was able to prove mischief. She said, if you can prove mischief, then I can request the Google account to be restored. And so I think that request has gone in, but I'm finding law enforcement, it doesn't matter whether it's Canada or the U.S., they really don't talk much and they don't communicate well. But they have now asked, though, the RCMP in Canada have created a file number. We got a case. So they can work on unauthorized access to a person's Google or internet activity is a cyber security felony. So now basically the RCMP can look at the phone because it goes beyond county borders, state borders, or international borders. The internet is, you know, worldwide. But they still can't look at the desk clothing for me because I've got some. I believe if I went and dug around in those bags, I could find hair of maybe what Cameron pulled out of somebody's head. Like, we could test it for DNA. We could get this blood work redone to find out whose DNA is on Cameron's clothing besides his. We need the Department of Justice or the sheriff or somebody to call the RCMP. Now, Austin Knutson is the new state of Montana Attorney General. I've sent things directly to him, to his department. Are things happening? Maybe. This is something that should have been handled by the FBI, because the cell phone part of it should have been handled by the FBI. And the FBI should be handling it because the sheriff is refusing to look and use new evidence.
Have you consulted with an attorney for legal assistance?
I talked to our local lawyers here in Canada. You got to get further away from Billings for a lawyer. So we found one in Helena. See, most Canadian lawyers, I'd love to have got a Canadian, they don't have jurisdiction in Montana 13th Division, the court. You have to have a license to be in that court. But we do have a wrongful death lawsuit now filed. It was filed by a lawyer in Helena, but he asked another lawyer in Billings to assist, but they wanted me to just accept that Cameron had walked and ground. They said, oh, you seem to be trying to still get information from the sheriff, so they wanted to withdraw. COVID hit, and I was too tired to deal with that at that point, but it was in that summer where I got the email that Linder had stated it was an inactive file. It was the first time he put it in writing. So I sent that back to this other lawyer, and I said, I'll sign the withdrawal if you want, but this is an inactive file. So they went ahead, and they actually filed the civil wrongful death lawsuit for me in September of 2020. So you have 3 years once that's filed to seek it through. And then when I kept asking for the USB stick, this USB stick that the county, Yellowstone County Attorney Office, had given to our lawyer, Daniel Gillespie, and he uploaded it into a Dropbox so I could see it. I'm in Canada, he's in the States. And I didn't get everything downloaded right away that first day. And when I went back a few days later or whatever, the autopsy photos and the video were gone. It had been downloaded again. And it took him until January 28th, 2020, to put those back up. And I never did get the video. And I never got all the autopsy photos. I'm quite sure I didn't. And the x-rays, of course, were just those three images. So part of the deal of us continuing with the lawsuit is I said, I want the USB stick. And it was, oh yeah, we'll send it. Oh yeah, we'll send it. Never sent it. Finally, in October of 2020, I asked, I said, could I have that USB stick? On November 5th, Daniel Gillespie says, I think we're not suited to be your lawyers. We want to, or we'll withdraw again, just because I want the USB stick. Anyway, so we finally, I signed all the forms, but now just this last 2 weeks, I found another lawyer and they are in, I don't know, I believe it's Helena also, but I feel that they're good. I said, it's inactive. I've given them everything and now I want money, but I need a criminal lawyer. We need a private investigator, but How do you find a private investigator?
And to conclude this interview, I have one final question. For anyone who might be listening to this podcast, what would you say to anyone with information about your son's death?
Do the right thing. The truth is going to come out because we have such strong evidence. This evidence we have is court ready. The TCS forensics is court ready. The death clothing forensics are all accredited labs. And to those people at the wedding party, look after yourself. Tell the truth now. Take it to RCMP or FBI. Take it to Austin Knutson. Cameron was your friend at one time, and it's just not fair to him or his family. You know, I guess the truth. People keep saying you want truth and justice, and I just want the truth, and justice will follow. I don't need a head on a platter. I just want my son, who the papers now, because of that sheriff said, drunken, intoxicated Canadian falls into creek. He didn't fall. He would have fallen in his own boots if he did. And I just want this good man's name cleared. That's what I want.
And that concludes the story of Cameron Collin. What happened to this young Canadian man? How did he end up dead after attending a wedding party? It was supposed to be a joyous event. Somehow, something went wrong and Cameron would be found dead in a creek. How did he even end up in a creek? And who cut off his finger and took his ring? Who switched out his boots? There are so many questions and no answers. If you know anything about what happened to this young man, please contact the proper authorities with your information. Can you help this family find out what really happened to Cameron? If you have any information about this case, please contact the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Department at 406-256-2929. And if you would like more information about this case, please visit the Cam Collin Updates Facebook page. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.